From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the New World Order, kicking things into high gear, aren't they? Stan and Holly Dale join us. Plus, we'll talk about some earth changes. Here's what's happening. A pioneering researcher was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine Monday, 3 days after dying of pancreatic cancer without ever knowing that he was about to be honored for his immune system work that he had used to try to prolong his own life. The Nobel Committee said that it was unaware that the Canadian-born cell biologist Ralph Steinman had already died when it awarded the prize to him, American Bruce Butler, and French scientist Jules Hoffman. Since the committee is only supposed to consider living scientists, the foundation held an emergency meeting and said the decision to give the $1.5 million prize will remain unchanged. What a story that was. San Francisco's controversial new law requiring cell phone retailers in the city to provide radiation information is now on. The ordinance requires cell phone retailers to display information about the amount of radiation emanating from cell phones and to provide fact sheets to customers who ask for them. Nearly 1 in 10 parents do not follow the CDC-recommended vaccine schedule when it comes to having their children immunized, and almost one quarter of those surveyed do not feel that this schedule is best. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, board-certified osteopathic medical doctor with us. I would see that would be low. 1 in 10 don't follow the CDC-recommended vaccine schedule, Sherry. Isn't that low?
Oh, I think it would be quite low. I think that there's millions and millions of parents across the country who have awakened to the problems associated with vaccines and have decided that the routine poisoning of their children is not a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing at all. So what does a parent do, though, when a school district forces you to get a vaccine and you don't want to do it?
All states have exemptions, George, that you have a right to refuse. Only West Virginia and Mississippi have medical exemptions. There are 19 states that have philosophical exemptions, so that you have the right to refuse. And I think one thing that's really important is that no shots doesn't mean that they're doing nothing. I think that parents who decide not to vaccinate are more conscientious about health, eating organic, sleep, taking vitamins, taking vitamin D. They're doing a lot of things to take care of their children if they decide not to vaccinate.
Sherry's website is part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Protesters who've gathered under the banner of Occupy Wall Street are looking to light a movement, but as hundreds of demonstrators rally against corporate greed and corruption, they've got a long way to go before becoming a defined cause like the Tea Party, according to some political analysts. That's not saying that they aren't trying. In 3 weeks' time, the Occupy Wall Street crowd has attracted high-profile attention. It has the purported backing of unions like the Teamsters and New York City's largest public employees union. It has attracted Hollywood types who love a good cause to drop in on, and even generated a discussion group at a convention of liberal leaders taking place in Washington, D.C. this week. And billionaire investor George Soros says he can sympathize with the ongoing protests on Wall Street, which have now spread to other cities. He said he understood the anger at the use of taxpayers' cash to prop up stricken banks, allowing them to earn huge profits. A large rally is planned for Wednesday in New York City with the backing from union groups. More than 700 protesters were arrested on Saturday on the Brooklyn Bridge. In a moment, Howard Bloom joins us as we talk about the mindset of people. And Bank America still having problems with its website, plagued by problems Friday and Saturday, supposedly fixed on Sunday, was not working again on Monday. Some users trying to access the bankofamerica.com get a message that the homepage is temporarily unavailable. Problems began on Friday, a day after the bank said it would start charging a $5 monthly fee for customers using their debit cards. The bank says we're not being hacked. I think otherwise. That's authorities say that TV pitchman Don LaPree was found dead after an apparent suicide in an Arizona jail cell on Sunday morning. Officials say they are continuing to investigate the circumstances surrounding his death. It was only a few days before his $52 million fraud trial was set to begin. The 47-year-old had been charged with 41 counts of conspiracy, mail fraud, wire fraud, promotional money laundering with his company, the greatest vitamin in the world. Horror in Italy. An Italian man tore out both of his eyes in the middle of a priest's sermon at a church near Pisa. Fellow parishioners watched in horror as the 46-year-old man used his bare hands to pull out both his eyeballs. He later told surgeons who were unable to save his vision, he heard voices that told him to do it. And a Canadian woman is looking for volunteers to take her late parents, their ashes, traveling around the world. 45-year-old Deb Green from Vancouver says her mother and father could never afford to fulfill their dreams of seeing the world, so she's advertising on Craigslist for travelers who are open to taking a little of them with them all over the place and sprinkling them wherever they may go. She'll get some takers. A comet discovered by amateur astronomers disintegrated in spectacular fashion when it plunged into the sun. SOHO recorded the comet's last hours. The end was punctuated by an unexpected explosion, and there was a coronal mass ejection soon after the comet dove into the sun. Is there a link there? Professor James McCanney with us. James, what happened over the weekend, too? NASA pulled things off the site? What was going on?
George, I hope we have a couple minutes to talk about this, because this is probably one of the biggest solar physics stories of the century. You know, I was on the show Friday night talking about solar conditions, and really the sun had been going way down in energy. Sunspot 1302 and 05 were just about defunct. And I said, by the way, there's a comet coming in from the south.
Yep.
And it's going to be hitting the sun in about 12 hours. At that point, NASA pulled the feed from the SOHO satellites, both the C2 and the C3, which is our vision towards the sun. And they didn't bring them back until Sunday. I was frantically looking around for information because I knew why they pulled the feed. And then we later found out, when I finally got some still photos of the sun went absolutely ballistic when that comet hit. There were other complicit agencies. Spaceweather.com posted that there was a double CME on the sun, but never mentioned the comets. Only after huge pressure over the weekend and the fact that this comet hitting the sun was everywhere on the internet, finally spaceweather.com came on and said, oh, it was just a coincidence. it is so ridiculous. But the point is, I've been saying for decades, and of course on this show everybody's heard me saying, that comets affect the sun. NASA is simply trying to protect this dirty snowball comet model, which doesn't work. It doesn't explain the data. And what I've done is I said comets are discharges of the solar capacitor, and this is one of the things they do. We have hundreds of videos from SOHO of comets coming near the sun and causing major CMEs. So what I'd like the people out there to do, and I know there's millions of people listening, write to the webmaster at spaceweather.com and tell him that their article that says that this is just a coincidence, tell him that James McCanney's work has explained this for decades, and they should wake up to this fact.
Maybe James, start posting some information about you on those websites as well. Thanks, Jim. A Formula One tycoon is linking up with the Dutch airline KLM to develop spacecraft that could bring every city on the planet within 2 hours of travel time. Can you imagine this? 2 hours. You want to go to Paris. Whoosh, up and down, you're there. 2 hours. A British passenger, by the way, was the first to buy a $93,000 ticket. I'd still rather go coach. For a ride on an early version of the craft, providing suborbital flights for space tourists. Up next, Howard Bloom joins us. We're going to be talking about Occupy Wall Street, the mindset of people. It's growing. How big can it get? And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Howard Bloom, of course, he's an expert in human behavior. And Howard, we were talking with executive producer Lisa Lyon today about how to handle this Occupy Wall Street story a little differently. Didn't want to do everything that mainstream is doing, just covering the protests. And she said, Howard can get into their brains. So here he is. How are you?
Well, I've been putting this together with something that we talked about 3 weeks ago to 4 weeks ago. We went on and did a show about flash mobs.
Right.
And it was shortly after the riots in England. And it was we talked about behavioral contagion, the fact that one person yawns in the library and suddenly 30 other people yawn, the fact that we're very monkey-see-monkey-do. There was an attempt to monkey-see-monkey-do the British riots and in the United States, and it didn't work. What you and I discovered on air a few weeks ago is that these flash mobs have been overhyped. They didn't really catch on. They weren't as big as they were said to be. So that's a movement that didn't catch on. Right now, the Occupy Wall Street movement, which at first looked like it had no prayer, no chance at all, is catching on, and it's catching on at increasing speed. So what makes the difference between the flash mobs and the current Occupy Wall Street thing? The difference is you can call it meaning deprivation. You can call it idealism deprivation. People don't need to walk into a 7-Eleven and walk out with a bunch of candy bars without paying for them. That's not their primary goal in life. Their primary goal in life is not to walk into or crash through the window of an appliance store and walk out with a 48-inch flat-screen TV. What really motivates people is not money, it's idealism. What really motivates people is the feeling that they are participating in something that is much bigger than themselves. And right now, the people who are showing up on Wall Street, who are being arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge, who are showing up in Boston and Chicago and San Francisco is about to blow, Pittsburgh is about to blow, and L.A., they're already doing something at the site of Michael Jackson's trial. All these things are catching on because there is a radical desire for people to do something that transcends themselves, something that is really meaningful, something that will change the world. And at the same time, there is a radical discontent that comes from the financial trouble that we have been in since September of 2008.
And it's spreading, Howard. That's what I also find to be fascinating. It's almost like the Arab Spring, not quite violent at this point.
The Arab Spring is an example that's being used. The Arab Spring is being used as an example. The Spanish protests are being used as an example. I'm sure in the minds of all of these protesters are the nightly pictures from the protests in Greece. It's spreading because people don't have jobs. Now, obviously, most of us have jobs. 10% of people, roughly, do not have jobs. And that's an awful lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
We're all aware that our jobs are in danger. The woman I date lost her job today.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's stuff coming very close to home, but that's happening to a lot of people. And people are very aware that they could be downsized. Plus, there are a couple of maladies that people are very aware of, a couple of sicknesses in the society. The fact that 1% of the people control 42% of the wealth is really bothering people, and it's showing up in these protests in the form of slogans. We are the 99%. We are the 99% of people who are being passed over when it comes to money, passed over when it comes to power. Another figure we're very aware of these days, whether people can cite the precise figure or not, the top 10% control 93% of the wealth. We're very aware of the fact that the people who own our big companies, that is the shareholders and especially the boards of directors and the presidents, the CEOs of these companies, have been emptying these companies out in order to increase quarterly profit. They have been moving entire factories. We used to talk about them moving them to Mexico. Now they don't bother to move them to Mexico anymore. Now they move them to China. We have seen a bunch of people who we have idolized, those of us who think that the private market is the solution to all problems, have idolized CEOs who are out there to maximize short-term profits. But to maximize short-term profits and empty out your own country and kill jobs in your own country, many people are feeling that's criminal.
And when it happens with hundreds and hundreds of companies, it adds up, doesn't it?
And entire industries. Yes, it does add up. It adds up to losing entire industries. We knew this back in the 1970s and 1980s. We watched while the Japanese had a concerted program in which their private industries worked very closely with a government entity called MITI, it was their finance agency, to empty out entire parts of the American economy, to take over the electronics industry and to do their best to take over the auto industry. Well, we've forgotten the lessons of that time. We've forgotten that there can be forms of economic war in which public and private have to participate together. They have to team up. And as a consequence, they were allowing the Chinese to do the same thing to us. And we are not putting a stress on developing competitive industries. We tried with the sort of government subsidy. We tried it with the saving General Motors. That was the government jumping in and saving a very, very important American corporation that's responsible for a lot of jobs. And it worked. That particular bet on behalf of government was a good one. And we tried it again, at least Obama tried it again, with Solarin, with the big the solar power.
That one didn't work.
That one didn't work. But that happens when you invest. One of the most important capitalists and entrepreneurs that America ever had was Thomas Alva Edison, who literally created, almost single-handedly, the entire electrical gizmo business. And Thomas Alva Edison said, basically, you need 1,000 failures to have one success. And those 1,000 failures are not failures. They are part of the climb toward success. Well, we need to know that. We've lost our pioneering spirit. We've lost our spirit that you have to take risks. We've lost our spirit that you lose sometimes in risks. And those are all things we need to get back. And the and it's still there, George?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Okay. You click away, but we're here.
Yeah. Okay, great. So the fact is we need to get that spirit back, and unions need to get it back. I met a union firefighter on the way from the tea lounge, where I do a lot of my work, back to home so that we could get on the landline tonight. And he was reciting the history of unions. He was reciting the fact that the air controller strike was a device that Ronald Reagan used in order to begin breaking the unions. And the unions have been broken, 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 and broken more ever since. Well, the unions were broken already in one sense. They were cutting into the efficiency of American workers. They were cutting down on our ability to outproduce people in other countries. They had work rules that were just staggering, feather bedding, it used to be called. Well, that has to go. Well, unions have to know that they're a part of the movement to make America outclass China, outclass Japan, outclass India, even outclass Germany, who we don't recognize as one of the greatest exporting nations in the world. We are up against a stiff competition, and to be up against stiff competition, everybody has to participate. Meanwhile, these protests, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy the Financial District in Boston, et cetera, these protests are tapping into something even you and I can feel. And George, when there was a short break in which they put a little clip of you saying that everybody knows that something's got to give here.
Everybody knows we all feel something.
Yes. And they are giving an outlet for that feeling right now. So they don't care what you're upset about, as long as you bring your upset to these public centers. And there's another very important point, and that is that by coming to public centers and demonstrating your discontent, you can get people to change things.
Well, and it's going to grow, Howard. There's no question about it. I can feel that, can't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And as it grows, there's been tension, not on the behalf of the protesters, but law enforcement has gotten uptight about this already. What's going to happen when these get bigger?
Well, the protesters are hoping that the police will kick in and help them, just the way that the military kicked in and helped in Tahrir Square in Egypt. They are hoping already that when the police put large numbers of protesters, as they did in the Brooklyn Bridge protests, where 700 people were arrested, they're hoping that when the police put protesters on buses, those bus drivers will refuse to drive. But you just said it. We all feel this discontent. We may feel it in different ways. We may have different solutions for it. But we all know the Democratic Party is not doing the job for us. The Republican Party is not doing the job for us. The Tea Party may not do the job for us. Obama was brought into Washington and said in his first days he was going to clean out K Street. He was going to keep our government from being a government owned and run by the lobbyists. Well, he gave up on that almost instantly. He saw you couldn't run Washington without K Street. Well, our government is being bought. You can see that every time that large donations lead to a flood of ads on the radio. It's been said over the last few days that the reason that Chris Christie is being wooed so heavily to jump into the Republican part of the campaign is that the presidential campaign is that the large money interests around the country are looking for somebody they can back, and Christie is able to tap into that money. Well, if he who gets the largest pot of money is he who wins the presidency, what does that mean about your power as a voter, or my power as a voter, versus the power of somebody who is able to donate millions of dollars.
Well, it's always been that way. Howard, we're going to take some phone calls with you as we talk about the mindset of people who protest on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next Tuesday, we're rolling out our book, Talking to the Dead, something we did with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Amazon.com has got a steep discount on it right now if you're interested. They've lopped off 41%. They do that. And also, they've discounted their Kindle edition as well. It'll be in bookstores all around the country as of Tuesday, next Tuesday. But Amazon has it as well. It's called Talking to the Dead. And we'll be back in a moment. We'll take phone calls with Howard Bloom on Coast to Coast AM. Howard, what does this exercise of the Occupy Wall Street tell you about the mindset of people as things begin to grow and grow and grow? Is it because of social networking? What is doing this? What's fueling it?
Well, it's been happening for a long time. You know, the Western system, there's The Genius of the Beast, the book that I've got out currently, and it says that the Western system is based on a balance between three opposing entities. One of those entities is business, one of those entities is government, and the third is the protest industry. And the protest industry got started in the 1760s in Britain. We had the ability to propagandize using modern technologies like the printing press, and it was taken advantage of to start an anti-slavery movement. Now, that's the 1760s. What happened in 1773 in the United States of America? The first major public protest. It was called the Boston Tea Party. What happened in 1776? The first establishment of a government or attempt to establish a government based entirely on a protest movement, the government of the United States. Then the War of 1848 came, and Henry David Thoreau wrote an entire book on civil disobedience because there was an anti-war movement against the Mexican-American War. So we've had protest movements for a long time, and they've been very helpful. They have helped us critique ourselves. They have helped make our system a self-correcting system. But things periodically get out of whack, and then the protest movements need to take to the streets, and then we sometimes need to sit back and listen very seriously to the protesters.
That's a good point. Will they listen?
Yes, I think people are going to listen because, as you said a few seconds ago, you can feel it in your bones that this is going to spread.
Yes.
Pittsburgh and San Francisco are next. Every city has people in it who feel radically discontented with things. And everyone has seen the example of not just taking to the streets, but camping out in the streets and taking over public locations. And with that in mind, one of the great things about protests is you don't have to be too focused on exactly what your solutions are. All you have to do is know there is a problem. And right now, Americans know there's a problem, know that at least that has to be articulated in the public space so that politicians stop running around like madmen and start performing like public servants already.
Hear, hear. Let's go to Tom in Port Angeles, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
How you doing, George? Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Mr. Bloom, a real honor to speak with you for just a second. I hope that these kids, and they're not all kids, really, I hope that all these people can take the time to get on some of the Tea Party websites, right, and stoptheinsanity.org, I think it is, and realize that some of this road for them has been prepared, and there's a lot of knowledge, and there's a lot of prefixture out there that's already been covered that goes all the way back to Ross Perot in 92. Maybe that would be a smoothing influence and keeping it from getting into something that it doesn't need to be, but it sure looks like a dynamic power, and I'm kind of excited about it.
And you're absolutely right that the Internet is making this so different from the last the spate of really public protests that we had back in the days of the anti-Vietnam War movement. And right now you can go onto Adbuster's site. Adbuster's originally called for these demonstrations back in July, and it looked like nobody was going to pay any attention. You can go on the, there's a whole bunch of these movement websites, Abolish Wall Street. All you have to do is do a Google search, and you'll find a small number of websites that will keep you up to date, the way that the We Are All Khalid website or Facebook kept students in Egypt up to date, minute to minute, really.
Well, you know, Howard, I think people, too, accept the fact that in America, there are some people who have created wealth with themselves because they've been innovative, they've worked hard, and they've developed things that nobody else thought of. I think what they're upset about at this point are the handouts to corporations, to banks, that are doing nothing but lining their own pockets and forgetting about the middle class.
I think you're absolutely right. Steve Jobs has been getting headline coverage, or was until he retired a week ago or so. He was getting headline coverage constantly. He was getting that headline coverage because we need a savior, and we knew that it was somebody like him. We knew that it was somebody who could invent something so new that even in the midst of a depression, people would pool their pennies in order to buy it. That's what gets you out of recessions. We have a lack of people like Jobs, and the fact that Jobs has been around has been a great, great gift to us.
Let's go next to Jeff in Dayton, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Jeff, you're on with Howard Bloom.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First up, I have a question, then a question and a comment. My question is to follow up with you, George. I think you said last night that there was a report they were pouring champagne and Dom Perignon out of the windows on the protesters below. Has that been confirmed or denied?
That was one of our guests that was on for the moment, and they felt that that was happening. I have not heard that myself.
Okay, but then my comment, though, in addition to what you have said, Howard, as to why businesses are leaving, there's also the factor to consider that America's corporate taxes are among the highest on earth. Even China, I think, is like, I've heard 16% or 25%. Canada is even low, and that's part of the reason for they're having a good recovery right now. And, yeah, basically, part of the thing is our bureaucracy, the unions, and the feather bedding you mentioned, and, again, the high taxes on businesses are chasing them out.
Well, I doubt that. And I know that's a controversial position, but the fact is that one of the top two exporting countries in the world is Germany. And Germany has a combination of socialism and capitalism. And it pays wages that are much higher than our wages. It gives vacations that are much longer than our vacations. It does a lot of things that we would criticize, and it has taxes that are higher than our taxes. But it encourages the development of a really well-schooled, well-trained worker base. Its workers can handle, they can do the highest precision work of any teams in the world. They can outdo the Chinese 3-1 when it comes to precision. And that comes in part from a public culture of duty and attention to detail. So it isn't the corporate taxes that are killing us, or two things wouldn't be happening. Germany would not be doing so incredibly well, much better than we are in terms of its percentage of exports. And we have unprecedented levels of profits and savings within major corporations. Major corporations right now in America are sitting on huge amounts of money. Now, I can tell you as somebody who, you know, my science project, here I am a science geek. I've been one all my life, but I founded two successful businesses. And I can tell you that when you're running a business, you invest in new employees and you invest in new equipment when you have new customers crowding toward your door, or you feel that you're about to get new customers crowding toward your door. The reason those companies are not spending that money on new plant and equipment and new workers is they don't sense there are going to be any customers coming at all.
To buy anything. And when are we going to get creative, Howard, and do away with this antiquated tax code and go to some kind of fair tax or a use tax and get people to have 100% or close to it of the money they earn so they can do things with it?
Well, you and I probably talked about this at one time or another, but there's a solution that a very clever guy named Henry Ford came up with a long time ago. He realized that he had taken a system that had been developed within the government and outside the government all through the 19th century called the American system, which was one of interchangeable parts. He had invented a new elaboration on that. That's the assembly line. And he had been able to make cars that other people were making for $2,000, and he was able to make them for $500. That's when that was an awful lot of money. But there was a problem. He could turn out so many of these $500 cars, it was ridiculous, but he didn't have customers.
That's right.
where in the world was he going to get customers? The country at that point was very much like it is now. There was a top 1% that owned most of the wealth and a top 10% that owned almost everything else. And those people already had cars. He realized he was going to have to build his own middle class. He was going to have to build his own customer base, not by trying to impoverish his workers, but by trying to raise their standard of living. And he did. He doubled their salaries to $5 a day. And other companies followed his example, and that did it. Now, you can't do that when you're competing with the Chinese. You have to be very careful about how much you pay people, but you can do whatever it is the Germans are doing, because remember, they are paying their workers more than we're paying ours, and they are out-competing the Chinese.
But you can at least give them, you know, a higher percent of what they earn so they can use it and spend it.
That's true, but I know that the people who are right now earning from $40,000 to $80,000 a year are not going to get that much out of another tax break. And remember, it was we had a government policy of nothing but tax breaks from the time that George Bush, George, whichever the younger is called.
Well, yeah, but you know, to me, a tax break isn't a check for $500
right.
in a little percentage. I'm saying do away with the Internal Revenue Service altogether and go to some kind of a use tax.
Well, that's
and give vouchers to the poor. So,
right.
You know, so they can, you know, spend some money.
Here's the trick. I started watching value-added taxes. Taxes, I think, that reflect the kind of thing that you're talking about. Those are taxes where you don't pay a tax unless you buy something. And if a company makes a widget that goes into an automobile, and then both the widget maker is pays part of the value-added tax.
That's right.
And the car company pays part of the value-added tax, and the whole bundle of the steering wheel company pays part of the value-added tax, and by the time the car gets to you, it's got all of these sales taxes, in essence, built in. And that scared me to death, because people who have the least money are going to end up paying the greatest percentage of their earnings that way. But for people who can buy cars the way that you and I buy chewing gum, these taxes do not matter. So it's once again going to be taxes that bite the not just the poor but the middle class the most, and leave the very wealthiest people unscathed. And one of the things that bothers me is, you know, I have this incredible friend who has 36 racehorses, and he raises them in, he sires them in Europe, he flies them over to Kentucky, he raises them in Kentucky, and he races them. Now it takes an awful lot of money to do that. And we have been propagandized by people like my friend to believe that what's in his best interest is in your best interest and my best interest, when in fact all it's going to do is allow him to buy a 37th racehorse.
Let's go next to Tara in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hi, Tara. Go ahead.
Hi, Howard. I was calling a caller prior to me said something about the people at these rallies at Wall Street and across the country need to go to the Tea Party sites and things, sites like that. Well, I really don't think they need to do that, simply because they don't need to be hijacked by another group of people that tries to steer them into their way of thinking as far as our economy. I mean, this is basically just, you know, the basic everyday American is being just smothered and pushed down, and we don't have jobs, we don't have anything. How can we support an economy when we don't have money to buy anything? You know, we can't afford to go out and spend anything over what we owe on our electric bill or our mortgage if we're above water on that. And you know, this is an independent group of people that are out there just saying we're being stolen. Wall Street's just taking all of our money. We bail them out. They're not helping us. If you want to refinance your loan on your home, you got to pay your note for a year.
See, Howard, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Someone like Tara is exactly what's happening in this country right now, and people are ticked off.
I agree with you totally. Now, there was a solution that was tried in the 1930s. Some people believe on the right, some people believe that the things done in the 1930s were the problem, and some people believe on the left that they were the solution. But it was to look at the infrastructure you were going to need 10 years down the road and start building it while people were unemployed. Give them work to do, but work that was eventually going to boom the American economy. So a lot of money was put into building these seemingly impossibly expensive projects like the Tennessee Valley Authority and the Hoover Dam. Now, what were those two involved in doing? Well, back in the late 1920s, there was this wild dream of electrifying every American home. Now, George, that was ridiculous. Electricity was something only the wealthy could afford.
At that point, that's right.
Yeah, bring the idea of electricity to every home. That was wild dreaming. That was somebody just trying to scam you to pluck the money from or the pennies from your pocketbook. But the fact is, it wasn't. It was the future. It was the American future. And it was built as public works projects during the 30s. And by the 1940s, all American homes were electrified. And guess what that opened in the way of a market for electrical appliances and what we would eventually call electronics.
Exactly.
It opened the way to a vast new economic frontier of prosperity. And we need to be building the infrastructures of the 2020 now.
City of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia. Go ahead, Dan.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
Good morning, Dan. It seems like these protests were manufactured, like prefab, to me. I saw some of the videos online from the news links, and it seems like people, the initial incitement was manufactured by the so-called Illuminati, because it was like so staged. Each word, each sentence they were saying into the camera looked like they were robots. And I'm like,
there's a great justice to that, because these things were staged. Even the Tahrir Square protests were staged to a certain extent. There was a small number.
There's always some organization behind these things.
That's right. But it's not the Illuminati. It's it is a bunch of idealistic young people and some people who are not so young, and they have studied, as we all study things when we want to make something happen. They've studied the way Tahrir Square worked. They've tried to replicate it, and again, that's how emotional and behavioral contagion works. We copy each other. So the element of copycat that you're seeing is for real. The element of a common plan is for real. But the spontaneity that George is talking about, people just showing up because they're radically discontented, believe me, many movements try to achieve that, and they don't. This one is achieving it because the country needs a form of self-expression about these issues.
Maybe we can get Mita in here from Austin, Texas, before the clock gets us. Go ahead, Mita.
Hello. I was thinking about how if this solar flare, which is an X2 something coming at our planet with our limited magnetic field to defend it, if it does seriously damage the Earth, it would prevent us from going through many of the horrible things that we've been talking about, like revolution and chaos and Mad Max and concentration camps and financial collapses and people starving and all the other many things we've been afraid of, like nuclear war. So it would maybe be a great blessing if things ended now instead of later.
It would put us back to the Stone Ages, Howard Bloom.
Well, if we had the equivalent of an electromagnetic pulse, a huge electromagnetic pulse coming from the sun, and it shut down all of our electronics, we'd be in dire straits. And when humans are in dire straits, sometimes dire things happen, including incredible violence. So this would putting a halt to everything that operates on electrons in the world, which would stop our cars, among other things, would not necessarily bring utopia. It could bring Mad Max.
Could be. Howard, thank you so much. Howard Bloom's website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now, howardbloom.net, and bigbangtango.net as well. And I wasn't kidding. What a mind he has, and he's got his finger on the pulse of humankind, to be sure. Up next, Stan and Holly Day will join us as we talk about Hopi prophecy, UFO sightings, and our sunspot cycles. We'll be back.